So I thought we have two, for those who are staying to the end of the Zman, we have, we'll get in the last shiur next Tuesday. That's the last day of the Zman. So we'll be able to have two Pesach shiurim. So I thought for today we would speak about a classic, important topic that relates to the Seder night, and that is Heseba, the issue of leaning at the Seder. And what I'd like to do is give a little bit of an overview of some of the prayers of who and when, etc. But then what I'd also like to discuss is one of the important kind of lumdisha topics that comes up, that interweaves itself, I guess, through the halachos of leaning. There is a question which I won't get to, because I just don't think we'll have time, which is what happens if you don't lean? You should have and you didn't. So what the halacha is per se we might discuss, but some of the lumdis behind that. There's a famous piece by the Griz, the Brisker Rav, on that. You can take a look for yourself if you want, but that Griz I don't think we'll have a chance to get to in the shiur. But a lot of the other things that are about Haseba, it's a very rich topic I hope that we can discuss. So it all starts at the Mishnah in Psachim, the famous Mishnah in Psachim on Daf Tzadi Teremet Beis, which tells us that in a very kind of awkward phrasing, which the Gemara obviously picks up on, but we'll just mention it to get started, that afilu ani sheb Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyesev, that even the poorest person can't eat without leaning. So it's a kind of an awkward phrasing the way it's stated, and it's not even clear that the what the focus is per se, but certainly it's mentioned in the Mishnah already that there's this idea of leaning. Why? Again, that's not the focus of the Mishnah per se, but it's mentioned. So already the Mefarshim on the Mishnah discuss why. Why are we leaning? So Rashi has an interesting formulation. Rashi says, Kiderech b'nei chorin zecher l'cheiros. So it's a little bit, as we'll see shortly, there's a little bit of a tension, or perhaps there's a duality going on in Rashi. Kiderech b'nei chorin sounds like present tense. Like that's the way free people act currently. Zecher l'cheiros sounds like it's a commemoration. Maybe you can synthesize those. Maybe they're meant to be two separate points. We'll have to keep that in the back of our minds. The Rambam in the Perash HaMishnayis, commenting on the Mishnah, says a little bit more elaborate, Kederach shehamalachim v'hagedolim ochlin. This is the way that kings and the great people eat. Ad shehei derech cheiros. It's a way of freedom. So in this formulation, it certainly sounds like in the present. This is the way rich people, free people, royalty actually behave. The Gemara in the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi there, in the beginning of Arvei Psachim, Perek Yud, Halacha Aleph, actually adds an interesting point. Because if you think about it, and again, we will get back to this when we discuss the current status of leaning, but nevertheless, if you just think about it intuitively, I think of all things I would have, if I had to ask you, you know, things that demonstrate, reflect, cheirus, royalty, I don't know if anyone would have thought about leaning. So I think a little insight, just again, we're just laying the basic groundwork, but just a little leaning can be found in the Talmud Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi just adds the following, which I think is a nuance, but at least for me it helped. The Yerushalmi says, that derech avadim lios ochlin umad. Just by adding that contrast, kind of hit me in a little more clear way than I might have otherwise, that the way of slaves is to eat standing. Now, I think the way I understand this, I would say it's not so much the standing versus sitting per se, as much as it is on the go. Right? When you're a slave, your time is not your own, so then you have to, you know, grab some food when you can. It may not be the most comfortable environment. So that's like literally or symbolically what the slave does. He's eating mu'umad. So when we're sitting or leaning, I would translate that to, in our vernacular, as lounging around. So it's not so much, again, there is the Rambam and others use the term of royalty and other things. That's a little bit harder to understand, at least in a contemporary sense. We'll have to think about that. But even just on a simple level, so this is like the ultimate expression of being carefree. Right, you know, you're on the lounge chair, you know, imagine as if you were, you know, at the pool or something, you know, feet up. That's what Haseba is supposed to be. Now, who can be so carefree? Obviously, someone whose time is his own, as opposed to the Eved, whose time isn't his own. So I think that contrast kind of just ends a little depth to the... But that's the basic idea. Now, the Rishonim suggests that. Where did the Rishonim get this from? So presumably the answer is from the Gemara, not there in Taf Tzadi Tet, but later on in the Perek, Adav Kuf Tez Zayin Amud Beis. There we are taught the famous teaching, the Mishnah, Psachim Kuf Tez Zayin Amud Beis, Bechol Dor Vador, Chayav Adam, Liros Es Atzmo, Ki'ilu, Ki'ilu Hu Ba'atzmo, Yatsa'ata Mishibud Mitzrayim. That's the Lashon, actually, of the Rambam. But the Lashon of the Mishnah, excuse me, I didn't read that carefully or precisely. It's Ki'iluhu Yatsa'mi Mitzrayim. That's the language of the Mishnah in Psachim. That we are supposed to see ourselves, Chayv Adam Liros Atzmo, as if we were leaving Mitzrayim. I didn't see it in print anywhere, but I remember hearing years ago that they said over from the Griz, from the Brisker Rav, that he thought this was the hardest mitzvah in the entire Torah. To really, really, you know, see yourself, not just to pretend, but to genuinely feel like you're going out, that's not an easy thing. That's a serious mind over matter. Not an easy thing. So that's what the Mishnah says. Now, it's interesting, the continuation of the Mishnah, okay, we have to experience this freedom. What's the therefore? How does that express itself? So it's interesting, in the Mishnah itself, the expression is, Lafichach anachnu chayavim, lahodos, lahalel, lashabeach. Therefore, we thank, we praise God, because after all, we're the ones, you know, going free. So of course we should be greatly appreciative. However, the Rambam, I think he is kind of the motivator for the Rishonim that followed, the Rambam adds a different link. And the Rambam connects this Mishnah to our topic. When the Rambam quotes this, this is in Chametz HaMatzvah, Perek Zayin, Halachos Vav and Zayin. So the Rambam says two things which are Mechudash. Number one, listen carefully, you'll catch it. Chayev Adam Laharos es atzmo ki'ilu hu ba'atzmo yotza ata mishibud Mitzrayim. What was the Rambam's chiddush there? He changes the Mishnah of Liros to Laharos. What's the difference between Liros and Laharos? So Liros is to see yourself. Laharos is to demonstrate, to be seen as. The way I think of it, to use an American reference, is like Colonial Williamsburg. I assume they have these kind of things in Australia and South Africa too. Maybe not. In England, probably it would be feel bad because it's all about us, like, you know, getting freedom from you. But no, I'm just kidding. That's Revolutionary War things. Anyway, what I'm referring to is the fact whether it's the Civil War in America or the Revolutionary War, you have all these historical reenactments. Do they do that in other countries? Where, you know, you go somewhere on a Sunday, you know, at the site of some famous battlefield or something, people get dressed up and they reenact something. And Americans are pretty sensitive about or proud of their history. They have these things called reenactments. So there they get dressed up as if they are, you know, fighting in the Revolutionary War. That's the war that we won and you lost, the Revolutionary War. Just making sure. Anyway. Or the Civil War, that's the one where we won and lost. See, that's the way you can guarantee a win, just fight against yourself. Anyway, so in all seriousness, that's, I think, what Laharos means. Whereas Laharos is in a certain sense easier, I think. It's not so much that you actually have to feel it or be as if, it's as you have to demonstrate. You have to show it as if to other people. Maybe part of it is harder, part of it is easier, I'm not sure, yeah. The Rambam is in Perek Zayin of Hilchos Chametz HaMatzah. The Rambam quotes the Pasuk, etc., for the source, and then the Rambam says, Kolomar kilu ata ba'atzmacha hayisa eved v'yatzasa l'cheres. That part makes it very hard. He starts getting very personal. You have to view yourself as if you were a servant. Again, is it view yourself or show? Not clear. But then the Rambam comes up with his second chiddush. After all of that, what's the bottom line? How does this express itself? So whereas the Mishnah had said, therefore, hodos lahalel, give thanks, the Rambam says, lafichach, kishesoed adam balayla hazeh, tzarech leechol, v'lishtot, v'hum mesiv, Derechs. The Rambam says, how do you do this? You lean when you eat. Mesiv derech cheres. So this, again, I think is the ultimate point that underlies what the Rambam and Rashi and others said on the Mishnah. That leaning is an expression of freedom. Either it's a way that we show our genuine feelings of freedom, it's the way we demonstrate to others. And that interplay, is it that we feel it because that's the way free people act now? Is it that we're commemorating the way free people acted then? So a little bit of a ambiguity on that, which for now we'll leave. But that's the basic idea. Yes?
Where did the Rambam get this?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. Again, maybe that's how we understood the Mishnah. Getting back to Afilu Ani Sarach L'Chad Shiesa. You know, that's the opening Mishnah. I think it was, as far as I know, it was just a Chiddush Misvara. It's a real breakthrough. Yeah.
Would the Nafkamina would say that you have to demonstrate, would that be the tablet of people that say that they're not with you? Perhaps?
What do you mean?
Is it if you said they have to demonstrate sort of outwardly that you're doing something, if they're an argument to say that...
Could be, yeah, that's possible. I think, you know, there's a minhag of Sephardim. I'm not sure if anyone here has that minhag, where they kind of act out certain things, they put, you know, over the shoulders. Do your family do that?
My family doesn't.
Oh yes, yeah, so family's not Sephardim, but when I first heard about it, I was so enchanted by the idea that we've done that. Not every year, but yeah, well, that we don't do. If I let my kids throw things at each other, it wouldn't stop at leaks. I can tell you that right now. Anyway, so there is some idea. You're right. There are, along those lines would be the Nafkaminas. Yes, 100%. Okay, with all of that, that's just the background. Now that was just me clearing my throat. Now we're ready to actually, so to speak, get started into the real halachos. So first of all, who and when? Who has to lean and at what part of the Seder? So we won't discuss everything. If you take a look at the back of, Rav Rimon, highly recommended, not that he needs my recommendation, Rav Rimon has the 2-volume, now in Hebrew or English, thing on the Seder. So you can have the Haggadah with commentary, but then he has a separate volume of the halachos. So I didn't use it to prepare the shiur because I didn't even realize it, but I actually was thinking about it and I double-checked someone's Haggadah in the Beis Medrash today. So in the back of the halacha section, he has like 10-15 pages on Heseba. So he discusses a lot of the issues, including things we will discuss, but he also adds discussions there about Karpas and Afikomen and other things which are not in the Gemara. So I'm just for now going to focus on the main things in the Gemara itself. This is a sugya, very famous, classic Daf Gemara, Psochem Kufchet Aben Aleph. So there, the Gemara does 2 things, which we'll review quickly. Number one, the Gemara says, what parts of the Seder do you lean for? And number two, the Gemara says, who has to lean? So briefly, which parts of the Seder? So the Gemara here, in a famous discussion, says, for matzah, you have to lean. Now, I'll add, which the Gemara does not explicitly, we also have Korech, which might be a fulfillment of the matzah. So we lean for Korech. For Afikomen, maybe that's the matzah. So we lean at various points when we eat matzah, even though Pashtus and the Gemara was just referring to Motzi matzah. But that's the thing that's clear in the Gemara. On the other hand, the Gemara says, we do not lean for Maror. That seems to be pretty obvious, right? If Maror is supposed to remind us of the Avdus, leaning is of the freedom, that wouldn't have gone well together. And then the Gemara says something very interesting. You have to lean for Yayin. But the Gemara says, we're not sure. Some say you have to lean for the first 2 cups. Some say you have to lean for the latter 2 cups. Rationales for why one would make more sense or the other would make more sense are offered in the Gemara. And then the Gemara says in a classic line, since we're really not sure which one it is, Aidi va'aidi by Heseba. Therefore, since we're not sure, just lean for all 4. Very, very interesting. Already some of the Rishonim ask a very obvious question, which we won't get into, but just you should note, the Ran and other discussion. If we're not sure when to lean, leaning clearly is, there's no makor in the Torah to lean, presumably leaning is the Rabbanan, why don't we say stuff like the Rabbanan Lakula? Why don't we say, since we're not sure when to lean, you don't have to lean at all? Uh-huh. That's the Ran's question, and others discuss it. But the Gemara says, since we're not sure when to lean, nope, lean at all 4. So basically, the various permutations of matzah, as a result of the suffix of the Gemara, the 4 kosos, that's when we lean. Maror, we don't lean. Yes.
Isn't it possible to say that part of the Seder experience is to feel free? And
yes.
For example, if I were to have the cups without leaning, then I wouldn't probably be fulfilling the 4 kosos.
So
and if I'd be getting so, rid of.
So I am fine with everything you said, but I'm not sure what you're there for is.
Therefore, I would not say something
German. Okay, so the only problem—it's very good. The only problem with saying it as strongly as you did is that the Gemara didn't say you have to lean for all 4. The Gemara said you don't have to lean for 2. It's just that we're not sure which 2. So, if we say it as strongly as you did, why would we only be theoretically even okay with 2?
Well, because we define what's the purpose of each individual cup.
Okay. And the Chanami, I'm just saying, that's fine. The other point which I want to make is, in light of your formulation, that's what I was mentioning before from the Brisker Rav and others, which is what happens if you don't lean. Is it possible that there's really a chisaron in the kiyum of even the yayin or the matzah without leaning? That's the famous discussion that the Brisker Rav has, which we're not getting into. Also, in light of what you're saying, there are, I think the Brisker's chief among them, those who are madayik from various things in the Rambam, you really should lean the entire time. I don't know about you, I don't lean when I'm eating the meal. Right? But you can certainly make an argument logically, certainly the way Ariel did, that you should lean. And I think there are those who do. I think there are those who lean for all of Magid. They're different minhagim and how far you want to take it, all based on your way of thinking. Yes?
Is leaning by Mar and Achim Mitzvah? Or, I mean, it's different on the
other. I don't think so. Yes, I understand. It's the converse of of not leaning for Yain. I don't think so. I don't know anyone ever did such a thing. I don't remember ever seeing it discussed. I don't remember. But I wouldn't think so. Just off the top of my head, I would not think so. Okay, that's when to lean. What really is interesting, and this will be something we're going to be focusing the rest of the shir on, is who leans. And this makes up the rest of the amud there, the rest of the sugya there in Psachim. So the Gemara says, number one, what about Isha Esel Ba'ala? This is not a gender thing per se, but specifically talking about a married woman. What about a woman who's at the Seder with her husband? Should she lean? The Gemara says, no. But then the Gemara says, an Isha Chashuva should lean. An important woman should lean. Now, why would a woman be putter? And what is the definition of an important woman? And why does that matter? We'll have to see. Not clear from the Gemara itself. But that's category number one, a married woman. Number two, the Gemara says, what about a son having the Seder with his father? Ben Eitzel Aviv. Yes, you do lean, says the Gemara. Number three, what about Talmid Eitzel Rabbah? Anyone staying for Pesach, maybe lucky enough to get an invite from one of the Rebbeim for Seder. Okay, no one's staying. Anyway, but okay, in theory, if you knew you were going to get invited to your Rebbe, would you stay? Anyway, okay, so the Gemara discusses this, and the Gemara says, you do not lean. You do not lean. Why, says the Gemara? Lo boy heseba, mora rabcha, kamora shamayim. But again, note that formulation. It's a very suggestive, seemingly unnecessarily exaggerated formulation. The Gemara could have just said, because there's a halacha called mora rav. But the Gemara Dafka says, Mora Rabcha Kamora Shemayim. Now, that's not the only time we have such an idea of the comparison between Kavod or Mora of a Rebbe to Mora Shemayim or Kavod Shemayim. But because of that relationship with the Rebbe, apparently, here I'm editorializing, but it seems the simple understanding of the Gemara, appropriate to lean. And finally, the Gemara says, a diuk based on a discussion, what about somebody called the Shulya Dinagra? That's the apprentice. Before a presidential candidate took off time to make a reality show, there was a concept in history, not only in halachic history, called the apprentice, right? You didn't like go to high school and college or something. You wanted to become a cobbler or a silversmith, so you apprenticed yourself with some expert. So let's say you went 100 miles away to whatever your expert is as the apprentice. You didn't necessarily go back for Pesach, so the guy had you over for Seder. Would you lean then? The Gemara says yes. And lastly, the Gemara talks about the shamish. What about the waiter? Right? Apparently, in the time of the Gemara, you didn't have to go to a hotel to have waiters. So, what about the waiter? And the Gemara says, no, the waiter would not lean. I'm sorry, the waiter would lean. I don't have the Gemara in front of me. One second. I think the Gemara would... Bayaseba, excuse me, my bad. Bayaseba, the Gemara has a suffix about the waiter. The Gemara says that you would lean. So, this is the list of the people we have. We had a number of categories. Again, a woman, regular or important, a son, a student, a apprentice, and then the waiter. The five people in the Gemara. Okay? Fine. Now, before we get into analyzing why yes and why no, one very interesting thing I want to mention just as an aside, kind of to bracket it, before we get back to this, and we'll get to some of the lumdas, I think, is what about nowadays? I kind of alluded to this at the outset, which is that the whole idea of leaning is an expression of freedom, of royalty, of wealth, however you want to put it, but it all seems a bit quaint and outdated, right? To be polite. Like, it just doesn't seem to make any sense, to be more blunt. Like, in what, I mean, if I were to ask you, you know, nowadays, you know, what would be a great demonstration of freedom. You know, you might say, you know, the queen's bone china, or some, you know, fancy silver, you know, or something like that. Not necessarily leaning. So this is not my hara or anything like that. And in fact, this was first mentioned about almost 800 years ago. The Rav Yoh, one of the Rishonim from Germany, he died in the early 13th century. The Rav Yoh already says in his day, Ubizman hazeh, cutting edge, 13th century halachic history, She'ein regilus ba'artzeinu lehesev. Because they already then, who's leaning? That doesn't mean anything in his day. As a result, he says, B'nei Chorin, what should they do? Yeshev Kedarko. Says the whole thing doesn't make any sense anymore. It's not relevant anymore. Therefore, there's no more Din of Haseva. It doesn't sound like such Orthodox Judaism. We don't usually do that. But says the Rav Yoh, it's out. Doesn't make any sense anymore. Doesn't think it should be done. The Hagos Mamunios, in his commentary on the bottom of the Rambam, he quotes this, but then he dismisses it. He says, well, the Rav Yoh is just a minority view, a Das Yachid, but it is quoted. The Maharil, who lived about 200 years later, also in Germany, the Maharil, who lived into the early part of the 15th century, he also quotes an opinion. It sounds like there was somebody else, maybe now there's two people, who he connects to the Rav Yoh, and he says the following. He has a very strong language. He says, "Dema cheres shayich bezeh." He says, "What does this have to do with freedom?" Rather, he says, "Adaraba dome lachole." Right? You just look like you're sick, or you know, like you don't look free because you know, doesn't look. What's going on? It seems to have missed the point. So in the end, he says, "Well, you know, this is you know what people do." The Maharshal, who lived a little bit even later, the Maharshal, he says, well, you know, he takes a step back. He says, listen, I'm seeing the Rav Yoh, maybe some others would disagree with him, but it is a minority view. But says the Maharshal, I just don't understand. Like, why don't we all follow this Rav Yoh? It seems so compelling. You know, maybe we should have a different halacha. Everyone should have fancy silver. Maybe we should have a new halacha. Everyone should go to a hotel. We should have some halacha. But why should it be that we have to lean? It doesn't seem to make any sense. So the Marshal says, very interesting formulation, L'rames hacherus shahaya b'yamim ha'im. We're not acting as free people do now, but rather we're recalling or remembering or hinting at the way free people acted then. Interesting. That might be his understanding of laharos. Right? In other words, we have to act, and that's as I said, the colonial Williamsburg, the dressing up. We act as if they acted. Or perhaps, if you want to go with the Liros, it's the same idea. Not so much that we're showing that we are free now, but we're contrasting what we experienced on that night. We went from the people who have to eat standing, so to speak, to the people who have more time on their hands, who can lounge. Yes?
This would be against the Rambam, seemingly, because he says that what you're supposed to do is make yourself be seen as someone who's free, as if you got out.
Now, he doesn't say now as if, like, in the Rambam's generation. I don't think he means that.
I think as if you got out now, meaning you're expressing freedom.
No, Kolomar, I'll read you, this is the line of the Rambam. Oh, I see, yeah, no. Yes, but you're right, he does say Ato, you're right. But he says Mishivud Mitzrayim.
Exactly, but you're getting out now, so how would you express...
I don't think it's a little bit too... anachronistic. I don't think he means you're getting out in, I don't know, whatever, 12th century Spain from Egypt in early antiquity, whatever that date was, I don't know. I don't think the Rambam, when he meant Ata, I think he meant you're experiencing as if you went out of that Mitzrayim. You're right, it's a little bit, but I think, I'm not sure, yeah.
I was reading the Havamina that we wouldn't lean nowadays. If, let's say we haven't talked about it before and the reason no longer applies,
So that's a good question. That's what I alluded to before when I said it's not so orthodox. No, that's exactly what I meant. Now, just because a reason doesn't apply, we don't necessarily reject it. So the good news is, everyone seems to reject the Rav Yoh. So you're asking, how could the Rav Yoh say what he said? So we'll hopefully have an answer for that. Okay, hopefully we'll have an answer for that. But interesting, I think it's a fair question, and that does seem to be... So one answer would be, listen, you're right, the reason makes no sense, but kacha, a lot of examples of that in Judaism, we're stuck. The other answer is the Marshal gave. The Marshal said, no, it's not supposed to be what we do now. It's supposed to be to recall what they did then. How do we paskin? Well, again, you all lean, so you know. But if you open up the Shulchan Aruch, in Simon, Tuf, Ayin, Beis, Siv, Zayin, the Ramah paskins, Yesh Omrim, the Ramah don't. The Rav Yoh, Yesh Omrim, the Bezman Azeh, Ein Derech Lehesev. Some say nowadays it doesn't make any sense. But he says, clearly not holding like that, Kedai hu harav yah lismach alav shebidyevah yotzeb lo haseba. Says the Ramah, at least nowadays, Bidi Evan, if you didn't lean, so we could just say, well, knew the Rav Yoh said you didn't have to lean anyway. Clearly the Ramah says you should lean, but for whatever reason, if you didn't, you could rely on the fact that there are opinions who say that nowadays you don't have to. So we have a little bit of that balancing act. Now, let's get back to the issue of all the who's. If you go through each of the who's in the Gemara, there's a number of questions that we could ask. Hopefully the ribui she'elot will then lead to a tshuva. But there are a number of questions that we could ask. Let's take one at a time. Maybe the one that's most complicated, women. Right? That's a metaphor for life. Dating advice, shalom bayis, all in one, and the shir. What can I do? You can thank me later. So what is exactly did the Gemara mean when it said that an Isha is Patur, but an Isha Chashuva is Chayiv? What's going on? So the Rashbam, on the Gemara there in Arvei Pesachim, the Rashbam has interesting formulation, a little bit unclear. Politically incorrect as it is, says Rashbam, Emas Ba'ala Ukfufa Lo. She has a certain fear or awe of her husband, and she is kafuf, she's subservient to him, Rashbam. Okay, yes, that's Rashbam explaining why a regular Isha, quote unquote, is Ptura. Now, what is that? What about an Isha Chashuva? So that's not so clear. Does an Isha Chashuva not have to have this Ema for her husband? Maybe the Isha Chashuva is not Kafuf. Maybe an Isha Chashuva means someone who's not married. Not 100% clear, but the Gemara did say Isha Itzabala. So maybe that's the contrast, and Chashuva means, by definition, if you're not married, not clear. That's the first sheet of the Rashbam. Rashbam also then quotes a second opinion, not his own, that of the Shiltos. The Shiltos of Rabbi Chaigon, who says, why should a woman not lean a regular woman? Lav darchayhu. It's not their way. And what does that mean? Yeah. Not 100% clear. So one possibility is Sneas. What's the problem with that? Then why should an Isha Chashuva be allowed to lean? Right? There's one standard of tznius, even when you're not so important. And so that's unclear. Maybe he just meant mitziuti, so to speak, just as a fact. Normal, typical women don't lean. It's a societal thing, but some of the hoity-toity, the fancy women do lean. Maybe. Not 100% clear. Then there is a very interesting sheet of the Rabbeinu Manoach. It's a commentary of Rambam and the Hilchos Chametz Matzah. Again, from the Rishonim, Rabbeinu Manoach gives three shitot. The first shita of Rabbeinu Manoach is, it really means single versus married. What does it mean at Isha Chashuva? She's not married, and therefore she's the Giveret Habayit. Right? If she's the head of we have such a thing as a titular head of the house, entitled, the quote-unquote head of the house. Doesn't mean you're more important or less important, but there's such a concept. It's still true for the most part today, and it certainly was true then. So says the Rabbeinu Manoach, when he's the head of the household, he'll lean and she won't. But if she's living by herself, she's not married, then she's the head of the house, and then she would lean. That's his first explanation. His second explanation is very, very important, very interesting. Real Chiddush. He says, what does it mean to be important? This is like instead of your Sichat Musar this week. He says, real importance in life only is in one frame of reference. Yiras Shamayim, Avodas Hashem, to be Chashuva, Bifnei Hashem, not in the eyes of the people in the society, who cares about that? But to be Chashuva, Bifnei Hashem, Bipri Hadeha, based on the way she acts, she's Isha Yirat Hashem, Bat Gedolei Hador, famous rabbi father, Kolelet Shivchei Eshet Chayil, she has all of the milas that we say in the Eshet Chayil, she's very firm and wonderful. So that's an Isha Chashuva, as opposed to a standard, mediocre woman. That's the second explanation of Rabbeinu Manoach. And then the third thing Rabbeinu Manoach says, which may be the most intuitive, he says an average woman is busy with all the food preparation. She's running around. The Seder night's a very difficult night for her. And Isha Chashuva is a wealthy woman. A woman who has people. She's sitting and enjoying the Seder. If she's sitting and enjoying the Seder, then why shouldn't she lean? Right? If she's too busy running around, so then Chazal gave her an exemption. You know, parallel to what some Rishonim explained, the exemption of Mitzraseh Shazman Grama in general. Right? That's not the reason in the Gemara, but some Rishonim offer a philosophical Tamei HaMitzvot that it has to do with the conflict with her responsibilities at home. So here, the third explanation of the Rabbeinu Manoach is that as well. The bottom line is, if you add it all up, we have different explanations for why, but the basic din in the Gemara stays the same, and in fact, that's the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, without giving an explanation of exactly what counts as important, but the Shulchan Aruch himself says that Isha Eino Tzricha Haseba Ela Emkein Hi Chashuva, unless she's important. What does that mean? Go back to the Rishonim. But then comes along the Ramah. If you haven't missed, yeah, exactly. Gabi knows the famous Ramah. Want to say it out loud? Yes, exactly. So way before the feminist revolution came along the Ramah in Krakow. Those of you who are going to Poland next week, I assume will go to the Ramah Shul. You'll go see his there. You could learn this halacha there. Says the Ramah, V'chol ha'noshim shalonu mikrei chashuvos. And that's very nice. It's sure to be a winner with your mom at home and one day with your wife. But the question is, what does it mean? Why? Like, you know, and to quote the Incredibles, if everyone is chashuv, then no one is chashuv. Right? So what is, what exactly did that mean? What exactly does that mean? Which definition is he using? Right? Can't be the wealthy one. Can't be the tzadekes one. It's not 100% clear. Everyone's so excited about it, but no one wants to actually think about what does he actually mean. But then, if you stop there, you would think, so what should be the next, if the Ramah had stopped there, what would be the implication? Of all of our women are chashuvot, then therefore they should all have to lean. But that's not what the Ramah says. The Ramah continues and says, but no, lo nahagu lehesev, women don't lean, ki samchu al divri haravya shakasav debizman hazein lehesev. Because they rely on the sheet of the Ravya that says nowadays we don't lean. So first of all, before I make my punchline, by show of hands in your homes, how many of your mothers lean at the Seder? A majority. Okay. How many people's mother doesn't lean? Shaya. Okay. So we have the Ramah on their side and they're not Jewish. Right? So the Ramah. So the question is, what is this Ramah talking about? In all seriousness, whatever your minhag is fine. But what is the Ramah talking about? If we hold like the Rav Yah, we don't like the Rav Yah. If we hold like the Rav Yah, then say that no one should lean. Kedai the Rav Yah for men. Once you say l'shitaso that the women are chashuvot, then they become obligated to lean. Yes.
So I guess it must be about chayru, because that would be, seems to be more of the Rav Yah, because that's where it wouldn't apply today.
So why do men have to lean?
Maybe they also have Sphira, I don't know, but I guess maybe Chashuva isn't enough of a reason.
In the Gemara it was.
It seems to be more like Beirut.
Okay, but you're on the right track, but we're not all the way there yet. Yes?
You say like it's Sphira, you say it's Ryan that the men would lean at that time, the women wouldn't, because they weren't Chashuva at that time.
So we freeze frame it. So that's excellent, excellent. Hold on, I'll take your question 1 second, Coleman. So you are Mechavin to... who was it? Let me double check. You're Mechavin to Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Shh. That's what I call Shana Bet. Okay. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is quoted in Rav Usher Weiss's Haggadah. If you're looking for a Hebrew Haggadah, if you've already bought Rav Rimon's hometown discount, the second one I would recommend if you're looking for a great Hebrew Haggadah is Rav Usher Weiss, Haggadah Minchat Usher. So there, he quotes from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who basically says more or less what Rabbi Splaver just said. And that is that, really, there's no reason to do it anymore. Why are we doing it now? Because we have a minhag to always do what they always did. Okay, but back in the day, before this breakthrough of the Ramah, that women are all chashuvot, women didn't lean. So the minhag is to perpetuate. So the fact that women are all chashuvot, but if the minhag for men and women is not to lean unless that's what they used to do, so then maybe that would be an explanation. Rav Shturbach in his Sefer Mo'adim V'Zmanim has another reason, but I'm going to have to leave it for now just because I think we're going to run out of time if I spend too much time on this, because I still need to get to the punchlines. Let me go a little bit further, okay? Coleman, quickly, I'm sorry.
That was my
answer. Oh, okay, good. Baruch Hashem.
We'll
tell you afterwards, okay? I'm going to run up on a shorter time. Anyway, bottom line is, how does that make sense is our question, but number two is, let's get back to the Rashbam. When the Rashbam said that the Isha is kafuf to her husband and has emat ba'ala, in all seriousness now, what did he sound like? It sounded like he was taking his cue from what line in the Gemara? The Morarabcha line. In other words, it sounds like he's alluding to some kind of a kavod of mora that a wife should have for her husband, and therefore it's somehow inappropriate. But is that really true? Now the Rambam does talk about reciprocal relationships, reciprocal obligations of kavod that a man should have for his wife and wife for her husband, but that's not in one direction. If it's somehow inappropriate for a wife to lean in front of her husband, so why is it okay for the husband to lean in front of the wife? Is that really true? Is there such a halacha that a woman can't lean or be comfortable in front of her husband? Very hard to understand. I want to get back to that. That's question number one, let's say, that we'll focus on. Let's go back now to the next step of the Gemara. The Gemara talked about a son etzel his father. Well, hold on one second. If there's a chiyuv for a woman to have some kind of a mora, to be kafuf to her husband, who else has an idea of being mora and kafuf? Maybe you've heard of a son, right? We gave a shiur a few weeks ago on kibud av aim. That's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Whatever the chiyuv of a wife is, it's certainly not as strong as the chiyuv of a son. So how can that make sense? It's totally inconsistent. How could a wife not be able to lean, but a son is allowed? And what about a Rebbe and a Talmud? So here we have a lot of interesting discussion.
You could say maybe that's something for the father, because it's kind of, as opposed to, because eventually he will be the head of household.
Okay, maybe. The Rashbam says that the son is not kafuf kol kach. But again, what does that mean? The same Rashbam who said the wife is kafuf says that the son is not kafuf kol kach. Really? His subservience to his father is less than his mother's to her husband? Hard to believe. Now what about the Rebbe and the Talmud? So here you have a very interesting discussion in the Rishonim. What Rebbe are we talking about? A Rabbo Muvhak? Right? In Halacha, they distinguish between two types of Rebbeim. Your main Rebbe, Rabbo Muvhak, and Stam, a rabbi who teaches you Torah, who you can learn from. We learn from lots of people, lots of rabbis in the world. Not everyone is your Rebbe Muvhak. Another question which the Rishonim discuss, let's say your father is also your Rebbe. And I don't just mean because your father maybe did Chumash homework with you in fifth grade. I mean, that's good too. But some people are very fortunate to have a father who really could be their Rebbe, like Mamish. They've learned with them their whole lives. So now you're wearing two hats. He's my father and his Rebbe, right? What did Rav Moshe Lichtenstein do every year? Right? If it's his father, he's supposed to lean. If it's his Rebbe, right? His father was both. What do you do? So that's also discussed in the Rishonim. So first of all, the Rosh, Arvei Pesachim, Oschaf, the Rosh says, if it's your father and your son, if your father and your Rebbe, excuse me, 1 + 1 = 0. You should lean. But how does that make any sense? Now there's a double reason not to lean. He's my father and my Rebbe. I have two reasons to have kavod for him. Says the Rosh, if he's only your Rebbe, don't lean. If he is your father and your Rebbe, you should lean. That makes sense. Number one. Number two is a big discussion in Rishonim, as I said, what type of Rebbe are we talking about? The Rambam and Hilchas Talmud Torah, nothing to do with Pesach, just in general. This is important. You go to your Rebbe's house for Vod one night a week. You go to your Rebbe's house for a Shabbos meal. Says the Rambam in Hilchas Talmud Torah, Perek Hey, that a Talmud in front of his Rebbe should sit like your Omer Lifnei HaMelech. You should be almost at attention. You should not be so comfortable or too casual in front of a Rebbe, the Rambam says. Chayev b'kavod rabo v'yiroso yoser mi'aviv. And therefore, lo yesev, you shouldn't lean in front of the Rebbe, el yoshev, ki yoshev lefnei melech. Right? You have to have a little respect when you're at the Rebbe's house. It's not time to just lounge around, you know, put your feet up on the couch and whatever. Anyway, maybe the Rebbe's house. Well, that's a different discussion. But prima facie, that's supposed to be our posture in front of our Rebbe. However, the Rambam there continues. It says, "Bameh dvar mamurim," in front of your Rebbe Mufak. Your main Rebbe, not just any old rabbi. What's interesting, however, is that other Rishonim, when they're talking about Hilchos Pesach, including the Rosh and others, say when it comes to the Seder, who don't you lean in front of? Not only your Rebbe Muvak, but Afilu Rav She'eno Muvak. The law of not leaning at the Seder is even from a Rebbe who's not your Rebbe Muvak. And what's interesting is there's an apparent contradiction in the Psakim of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya and Hilchos Talmud Torah, passes like the Rambam, that in general the prohibition of leaning is only in front of the main Rebbe, the Rebbe Mavuk, but the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim and Hilchos Pesach says the halacha of not leaning at the Seder applies even to Rav Sheino Mavuk. So what is going on? If we know that in general, in terms of respect, it's a din in Rabba Mavuk, so why should the Seder be more machmir? Last but not least, the Gemara had ended with two other cases, the apprentice and the waiter. In both cases, the Gemara said, chayv, but from the fact that the Gemara needed to say chayv, what do I learn? That there was some kind of a havamina that they would be potter. Mehechetesi. Where does that come from? Why would you think that anyone would be potter? There's no mitzvah to honor your apprentice. Maybe a good your master or your mentor. It might be a good idea. But there's no mitzvah. Moreover, some of the poskim ask, even when it comes to the issue with the father and the son, what was the hava mina? After all, famous Rashi, Ala Torah, based on a famous Gemara you all know, that ish imo v'aviv tira'u, v'es shab sotai tishmoru, why the juxtaposition between keeping Shabbos and honoring your parents? Because even if your parents tell you to be mechal Shabbos, Shabbos comes first, you don't listen. Kibud av ha'em is never docha any mitzvah. So why would we have had a hava mina that maybe because of kibud av ha'em the son wouldn't lean in front of his father? When do we have such a thing that because of kibud av ha'em you don't do a mitzvah? With all these questions, I gotta get to the punchline. If we have time, I'll be happy to take the questions. But with all these questions, we need a resolution. So I think the answer to all these things comes from the Griz, the Brisker Rav. You can find this not in his own Sefer, the Sefer al-Rambam, but in the Brisker Haggadah, which is more officially known as Haggadah Shel Pesach Mi Beis Levi. So in the version that I have, if you don't, you see if we have the same versions, I have it on page 94, Amud Sadi Dalid. It's been reprinted more than once, so you might have the later copy. I think I have an earlier version. You have it? Okay. Excuse me. Well, maybe the punchline, which I'm quoting, is on Sadi Dalid. Anyway, so says the Brisker Rav the following brilliant insight, which turns the whole sugi on its head. It says, we've been making a mistake. Mitchil of Adsof. We were thinking that this is a formal din based on kavod, based on ema, mora. And then we found all these inconsistencies. A wife more than a son, a rebbe, mufak, not mufak. All of that is in the world, in the orbit of kavod and mora as formal legal categories. However, says the Brisker Rav, that's not what's going on here. Chayv Adam, Liros is Atzmo, means you gotta keep it real. Now remember, this is the same Brisker Rav who I said in the beginning of this year that this is one of the most difficult halachos in the whole Torah. To really, really, really feel it. So says the Brisker Rav, L'shitato, says it's all about really, really feeling and experiencing the freedom. The Gemara here on Daf Kuf Ches is not discussing Hilchos Kavod, Hilchos Mora. It's discussing the Metzius of Kavod and the Metzius of feeling Kafuf or less Kafuf. And therefore, Allah the Rashbam, what's the Rashbam referring to? Not that there's a halacha that a woman feels subservient to her husband or feels that she has to be a little bit more formal at the table with her husband. But a metzius, There's no point in leaning if you're not going to feel chayrus. Anisha chashuva doesn't necessarily have to do with wealth or this or that. It has to do with the relationship, which may be why the Rama already could say a few hundred years ago, kala nashim shalanu chashuvot hein. Not in some objective sense. They weren't all wealthy in Krakow, I can tell you that. Most of them were dirt poor. They weren't necessarily all tzedekuses, despite what it says in popular history books, although many of them may have been. It was about a metzius of the interaction between the husband and the wife. Moreover, now we understand beautifully what the Rashbam said about a son. He said, lo haya kafuf kol kach. Now that's, what does that mean? How can you say he's not so kafuf? It's a mitzvah d'oraisa of keeping aveim, one of the most important mitzvahs a child can have. Says the Brisker, it's not about that. Of course he has a mitzvah of keep it aveim. But me, first of all, me didn't keep it aveim. Not only is it chinuch. What father wouldn't want their son to lean? So the Meiri says, yeah, all fathers are mochel. But the Brisker says, you don't need the mechila. Because it's not, even if the father wouldn't be, that's not the issue. The issue is, will the child feel it? And the bottom line is, what you see something very beautiful from the Brisker of, whose youngest son, Rav Meir, just passed away the other day. You see something beautiful from the Brisker Rav. That even though a child should have a certain amount of kavod and ema for his parents, but somehow, and if we're Baruch Hashem fortunate enough to have healthy relationships with our parents, and we all what I'm referring to, despite hopefully having a fear, reverence, honor, love of our parent, but somehow that doesn't take away from the fact that there's still a certain amount of intimacy and level of comfort or casualness. If you have a healthy relationship with your father, you're not so worried about leaning or not leaning. Right? If you're scared about how you're going to sit in front of your father, there's something probably not most ideal, dare I say even healthy, about that relationship. You see from the Brisker Rav, he says very beautifully, that's not a contradiction to kavod. That's not a contradiction to having mora'av. As the Rashbam said, a ben is not kafuf kol kach. A child who feels so kafuf in front of their father, that's not required, it's not ideal, and again, I'll add, probably not even healthy. That's certainly not required. It's not about that. Yes, there's a din of kavod av aim, but a normal son with all the kibud av aim that he's supposed to have, not only is it not a contradiction to the kibud av aim, but a normal son can feel genuine chayrus even in the presence of his father, because that's the healthy relationship and freedom that the father of expression, that the father will allow the child. We now understand, I'll get back to the Talmud in a second, but we can now understand the Shulya Dinagre and the Shamish, the apprentice and the Shamish. Because there, even though there's no halakha of kavod, but there might be a metzius of kavod. But interesting, what you have to say, according to the Brisker Rav, is that despite the fact that they may be a little ill at ease in front of their boss, in front of their mentor, but they're told to overcome that. It's an interesting point. I guess I think we have to acknowledge this in a kind of hashkafic way, that a normal Isha who has that, according to the Rashbam, was not encouraged to overcome that. That was just considered a metzius that was acceptable. But a Shulya Dinagra and the Shamish, the apprentice and the Shamish, even though there might be a sense of natural hesitancy, halacha doesn't say, okay, therefore don't lean. Halacha doesn't overcome that and feel that freedom. Apparently that's possible. Apparently with a typical wife in the time of the Gemara, that wasn't possible. And now what about the Rebbe Mufak versus not Mufak? Again, it's beautiful. If you're looking at it just me din the halachos, so the halacha may be limited to Rabba Muvak. But if you're looking at it as just how do I feel, right? If you were just invited to even at home, you go back to your home, whether it's Melbourne or Muncie, and your parents say, guess what? First Seder, we're going to the Rav's house. Right? You might feel a little bit hesitant. You're in front of the Rebbe. I mean, I just came back from Yeshiva. I was looking, you know. Or for that matter, if you're just in Yerushalayim and, you know, somebody said, oh yeah, I have, the Rav of Shari Chesed, yeah, he has people over for the meal. Like, whoa, you know, there's a certain level, there might be. So therefore, now, in Sezer Shulchan Aruch, in all these cases, if the Rebbe is Mochel, which presumably they would, so then, what? So, if I was reading the Shulchan Aruch 20 minutes ago, I said, then you're allowed to lean. But now, in light of the Brisker Rav, we would understand when the Shulchan Aruch says no, but if the Rebbe is Mochel, then there's no reason to feel apprehensive. The fact that the Rebbe gives you that sense of Mechila would hopefully help you overcome it. But let's say you couldn't. halacha l'maisa. Let's say you really were just on edge. You're too nervous. You're in front of your rebbe. You're in front of his rebbe. You just feel too nervous. And chanami, I think that would be the clear din from the Gemara and from the Shulchan Aruch. You wouldn't lean. Aye, but isn't there halacha? Yeah, but there's a metzias. The Mogen Avram says, let's say a person who's listed in this Gemara as pucker. What if they wanted to lean? Could they? Machmir, says the Mogen Avram, it's foolish. There's no such thing as chumra here. Why? Because again, it's a metzius. If you don't feel it, and therefore you won't be able to be comfortable in that environment, it's too formal. And therefore you were putter, to just say, but I'll lean anyway, would be perhaps a hollow gesture, and it wouldn't necessarily be a point. Last but not least, I saw this idea, or a version of this idea, in the Hare Kedem, in Chelek Beis, and here he adds one little ha'ara, which I mentioned at the outset of the earlier part of the shir. When the Gemara says that the Talmud is potter when he's in front of his Rebbe, why? Mora rabcha kamara shamayim. So I noted at the time, why did the Gemara have to say that? Couldn't the Gemara have just said Talmud is chayiv in mora rabo? Why did the Gemara have to go out of its way to use that very more colorful phrase? Mora rabcha kamara shamayim. So Rav Soloveitchik apparently explained, because it was alluding to this point. If it was just said kamara rav, I would think that's a din. But Gemara was telling us, no, Mor Rabcha Kmor Shemayim is referring to the Metzius. If a person really feels that way, that when they're in front of a Rebbe, feel that they're in the presence of the Shechina, that they're in the presence of Hashem, in some sense, so then they're going to be, you know, ill at ease, they're going to be uncomfortable. I never had Seder, you know, at a Rebbe's house or something like that. But I have at other opportunities, I was in the car with a big Rosh Hashiva. You know what's even worse than being in the car? The elevator. Right, it's like on the one hand, right? Think of like who your greatest hero would be, right? You know, if it's me, don't worry, we can arrange that afterward. But imagine, let's say for argument's sake, you know, maybe one or two of you, it's not a rabbi, it's not a Talmid Chacham, right? There's some other great sports person or something that you really, you know, would have loved to. I have a friend who I would have asked him 2 months ago, he would have said Justice Scalia, right? There's certain people like, you know, who are, you know, so if you're alone with that kind of a person or in an intimate environment. On the one hand, it's like the greatest, most exhilarating feeling. And simultaneously, and this is in no way a contradiction, they're both true, it is terrifying. And the last thing you are is comfortable. You may relish the moment. You may take advantage of the experience. But it's not natural comfort at all. And that is a type, if you don't have that, then that will prevent you from... Now, you might say, to have a Seder at my Rebbe's house, it's better than leaning in Chanami. If I had a choice, I might go with that too, and I'll figure it out. I'll lean next year. You know? But again, I think this is an interesting stand all the different aspects of this sugya.